Warning. This episode contains adult themes and situations that may not be suitable for children or sensitive ears. Listener discretion is advised.
Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer roaring for a good time, Williams.
No, I'm not.
We also got with us intern slash stenographer slash part-timer slash coffee bringer but brings no coffee and still I will be nicer to her, Amy.
Still, yay, goals.
Yeah. We got a great and interesting show for you as we are going to be talking about the recently dropped Hulu film Fire Island. It's a very interesting movie and actually it's going to be bringing a lot of conversation to the table and we are excited to talk about it. So before we do, Spencer, give us them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can catch us all 300 alleged episodes over at our website at filmlosophers.com. We got everything from anime to action to romance to rom-com to discussions to everything regarding the industry. If you're looking for it, we got it. Check us out, filmlosophers.com. Also, you can check us out at our on any platform streaming podcast, which is iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, or TuneIn. You can tune into each and every one of those places. Give us a follow. Give us a subscribe. Also, listen in. And if you think we deserve it, give us a 5-star review. We'd love to hear it. You know, we'd like to see it. I think we're worth it.
We are.
Right? Yes. Except for Amy's, what was that last week? 1-star.
What?
Yeah, you were like, yeah, we're worth one. Like, no, we're worth many, several. We know our worth. check us out on any of those streaming platforms. Also, you can also check us out on the socials over at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at facebook.com/filmlosophers or on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. We got a lot of great things we're going to be announcing as well as a giveaway that we'll be doing starting in July. We hope you're ready for it because... I don't think Spencer's. I didn't even mention it to him.
No, this is surprise. I'm really surprised. We're having a giveaway. Did you hear?
No. I did now. I don't know what it is, but something's being given.
Like I said, we got a great show in store for today. But before we do, we like to hit you with a little bit of movie news. And of course, at the top of that list, it is raining fire. And by fire, I mean trailers. We've had a slew of trailers dropped in the last couple of days. In fact, in the last week, and we actually wanted to take some time to talk about some of them. And thankfully, we're going to be giving everybody a timer because some of the members at this table tend to kind of meander a bit on their conversation.
I can't help it if I'm passionate.
I didn't say no names. Spencer, did you say a name?
I don't.
He coughed aggressively. Yeah. Roll the playback.
So, with no further ado, we're actually going to start with Amy in a trailer that she saw that she wanted to talk about in Lyle, Lyle, Crocodile.
Yes, so Lyle, Lyle, Crocodile is actually going to be based on the 1962 book series Lyle the Crocodile by Bernard Weber, I believe was his name. But the brief synopsis is, when the Prim family moves to New York City, their young son Josh struggles to adapt to his new school and friends, and all of that changes when he discovers Lyle, a singing crocodile that loves baths, caviar, and great music. I almost said movies. He might like movies, too. He didn't really do that in the book. Okay. Of course, the titular character is going to be voiced by one Shawn Mendes. Following with our cast is going to be Javier Bardem, Constance Wu, newcomer Winslow Fegley. He's going to be playing Josh. Brett Gelman, which everyone knows as... I keep calling him Maury from Stranger Things, but
Maury?
It's not Maury. I don't know what his name
is.
Murray.
Murray.
Sorry. I called him Maury. Sorry.
And like then, Maury Povich?
You are not the father.
No, he's not. True. And Scoot McNairy. I'm really excited about this.
Scoot
Scoot. I'm really excited because when I was a kid, I used to read these books, and I'm a sucker for a crocodile. Also, I might know a dog named Lyle, which is even more adorable. And super awesome thing about this, because I'm trying to be quick, is that Paul M. Pasek, who wrote the music for The Greatest Showman, the opening song for La La Land, as well as Dear Evan Hansen, are going to be writing the music for this. So yay, October, hurry yourself up and watch Lyle Lyle Crocodile.
All right. Wasn't exactly 45 seconds, but we'll make it work.
What?
Spencer, you actually saw a trailer with for Barbarian.
Yeah. So Barbarian is this movie where this woman apparently is in town for a job interview. She has an Airbnb.
That's scary enough as it is.
Yeah. Great start. She's looking for the key in the little lockbox. It's not there. And some guy's like, can I help you? He's like, I booked this. And he's like, I did too. Let's call these people. And I'm like, already. Like, this horror movie is off to a bad start. You don't, like, no. If your double book is like, okay, I'm going to bounce now. Like, get me in an Uber out of here. And so, because then she's like, okay, I guess I'll stay the night. And it's like, blah, blah, blah. I'm not an axe murderer, but is he? So, like, that seems to be this movie. And I am intrigued on how they're going to make this, you know, make her not look stupid, because like she should have left in like the first 5 minutes. I was already noping her going inside.
I was going to say, you were already yelling at the TV. No.
Yes, I already was. See this. I'm already yelling.
I can see it already. Awesome. That actually looks really cool. I just saw the trailer to it not too long ago too. So nice. And lastly, I wanted to throw in the new horror trailer for Smile, directed actually by first-timer Parker Finn. He actually wrote it and directed it in his feature fame debut. It's actually based on a short film that he did not too long ago in 2020 called Laura Hasn't Slept. But the film stars a few really notable people, including Cal Penn, Rob Morgan, Kyle Gallner. We all know Kyle Gallner from... he was in the Scream movie, the recent one, the one who he dies super early. He's also been in several other things as well. The movie's super unique in that it gives the perspective of it's not the person in the chair that's usually the one going through the issues. It's actually the one who's listening to the person in the chair, based, you know, the therapist herself. After witnessing a bizarre traumatic incident involving a patient, Dr. Rose Cotter starts experiencing frightening occurrences that she can't explain. Rose must confront her troubling past in order to survive and escape her horrifying new reality. I feel like this movie really is going to kind of teeter into a little bit of the Batman mythos, because the whole idea of like these people are nuts because, you know, they have these weird kooky smiles. It's like that, you know, uncanny valley kind of look that's insincere. And knowing that the Joker's trademark, especially when he's hurting people, is like to put a smile on their face. I don't know. There, it might be a far off aloof kind of mentality, but still, it is something that, you know, could possibly happen.
Well, you never know. It could be like a, what's that movie called? Brightburn type thing.
Oh my God, that's right. I forgot about that one. This movie's put out by Paramount, so we'll see what happens. But so far, right now, the release date is late September, you know, so here's to hoping. But speaking of smiles, I did want to transition over to this other piece of information, this news that's coming out, and that is neon costumes. Nothing makes people more happier than seeing 80s neon colored clothes.
Mid 90s? Or is it 80s?
Well, 80s and 90s, but it looks very 80s. Neon costumes have been leaked in the new live-action Barbie film. If you've been living under a tree, you may not know that Ryan Gosling and Margot Robbie have both come aboard to play in the first live-action Barbie movie, directed by Greta Gerwig. This movie is essentially supposed to pit these two as the titular Barbie and Ken duo in a modern world. And there was a set photo that was leaked out while they were on, you know, while they were on set, of them wearing the most gaudy looking outfits straight out of like Scary Town. They look like early night. What they look like is what you had said earlier, Amy.
Yes. So in the 90s, there was, everyone can, if you look it up, you will find it's called the Jazz Cup. It is blue, or it's purple and turquoise. And when you see this cup, you will know what it looks like. It is quintessential 90s.
Actually, if you've owned a 90s Barbie, there's a roller skating Barbie who looks pretty much like what she's looking like right now.
Oh, no.
Yep. Like, so much so, I'm pretty sure that's the inspiration for this outfit.
Oh, absolutely.
So all I have to say about this movie is if they do not play that dang Aqua song, they failed.
The Barbie girl Aqua song?
Hi, Barbie.
Oh my gosh.
Like for credits or whatever.
Kid. I don't think Ryan Gosling can get that low.
Side note, the German version of that song is just...
They're German, aren't they?
No, like the German version of the song.
No, I know, but isn't Aqua German?
I don't know.
I didn't think they were German.
They sing it in English, but like there's a German like variant of the song.
That would explain Ken's deep voice and scariness.
It is the most insane song I've ever heard.
I'm sorry, Danish, Norwegian.
So maybe a little bit.
Maybe a little bit. But
in other words, something to listen to after the podcast.
I mean, honestly, I'm tickled pink, no pun intended, to see these clothes and to see like 90s nostalgia put into a film so harshly. But to the same effect, I don't know if I'm interested in actually wanting to see this movie. I mean, okay, put aside your particular like request for having that song throughout the movie or in parts of it.
Throughout the whole movie, not on a loop.
Not on a loop, but having like being in the movie in some point, that interests me. Everything else, I mean, I get it. Greta Gerwig is pretty unique in her filmmaking, and she's not somebody who's gonna like look for a cash grab in, you know, creating a you know, no pun intended, plasticky female role model that's already been existing for the last 70 years. I feel like she'll put a really interesting spin. I just don't know if I will personally be the audience for that particular film.
Sure.
Putting it plainly.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest, though, because of this podcast, we're probably going to go see it.
I'd be surprised if we didn't. It has to have a whole conflicting month.
Probably.
No,
it's hard to
quantify like how much I'm really not interested in watching this movie, but at the same time, I'm really interested in seeing if this movie blows my mind or blows the movie apart. Like, I'm interested in the extremes right now with this film. There are certain movies that I'm like, all right, let's check it out. Let's see, blah, blah, blah. And I'll go in, come out, oh, okay, whatever. This movie, I'm looking for either seeing the grenade to blow up in the movie or the grenade to blow my mind because this movie was the best thing ever. So, who knows? I mean, I'm I don't know. What do you think, Spence? You're pondering.
Yeah, like, definitely. I feel like this is at least a streaming service watch of some sort.
I agree.
Concur.
But I'm curious on if, like, because I do like Lady Bird, which is another Greta Gerwig movie, which I thought was fantastic.
Based here in Sacramento?
Yeah, which is great. We have a mural of her, I just found out.
Okay. In downtown?
But, like, I'm very interested to see how she's going to turn this one out.
That's true. Like, it's, I don't know. Like, I haven't seen a lot of her work to kind of pin down to say, like, how she can make the pivot. Kind of like Jordan Peele. Jordan Peele can make the pivot to where when the movie's going, you get to that aha moment where you're like, that's what he's trying to say. I get it now. I don't know how well she does in that. I haven't seen enough of her films. I loved Lady Bird. Lady Bird was a great movie.
You didn't see Little Women.
No, I didn't see the new Little Women with Saoirse Ronan in that one as well.
And Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
So who's to say? You know, maybe it might be great. Maybe, you know, the first trailer will be like this epic blow your mind kind of thing. Or it may be, I don't know, something, you know,
you mean
bland.
Like Barbie and Ken out of time?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Feel like that's what's gonna happen.
I feel it with you as well. Also, because I went to go look at these pictures and I started talking about the cup, but the other thing I realized is that she has written this with her partner and her former husband, Noah Baumbach, who wrote and directed
Marriage Story,
which was super heavy. Like, it was really great. But yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat because I don't know how I feel. And also, I have this thing where I really don't like Ryan Gosling. Just in general.
What do you mean you don't like Ryan Gosling?
I don't like Ryan Gosling.
Is it because you haven't seen him in anything?
No.
I mean, are you just relegated to just like, you know, Remember the Titans? Nope. And
I liked him in Remember. So here is the big thing, and I'm going to be very divisive. I hated him in The Notebook.
And, I mean, but that's one movie.
Yeah, but that also spun into La La Land after that fact. So
La La Land was good.
I know. The movie itself was good. I just did not like him. I think I've had this conversation off mic with
you. I don't know if you're seeing
so many red flags.
So anyway, we don't have an actual end date for this film, but we will keep our eyes peeled and who knows. But that speaking of having a colorful party, that transitions over into our film review of the evening, and that is Fire Island. I actually had a little bit of trouble because I'm like trying to figure out, like, is this a Hulu? Is it a Paramount? Is it a?
It's a Hulu, isn't it?
It's Hulu. This movie was a film that we had actually collectively decided upon, and we were hoping to have it done in June. In the midst of June, and thankfully we'll be able to get it on the last day of June in terms of recognizing Pride Month, and you're just showing the love and spreading love. So we're excited to talk about it, and I'm sure you're wondering what our ideas and our opinions are. So before we continue, Spencer, why don't you give him that official synopsis goodness?
Inspired by the timeless pursuits from Jane Austen's classic, Pride and Prejudice, the story centers around two best friends who set out to have a legendary summer adventure with the help of cheap rosé and their cadre of eclectic friends, who are never far behind. The group of best friends gather on Fire Island Pines for their annual week of love and laughter, but a sudden change of events might make this their last summer in gay paradise.
Directed by Andrew Ahn and written by and starring Joel Kim Booster, the film also stars Bowen Yang, Conrad Rikimura, and Margaret Cho. It's kind of news to me, but one of the main actors, in fact, I believe one of the main guys
No, it's Joel Kim Booster.
Yeah. So, was it him? Yeah. He also wrote this movie. So that's actually really cool, as well as starring in it and whatnot. So, a couple notes about the film. The film is based on Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, the classic story of, you know, love and loss and craziness and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. The film was first developed as a series titled Trip for the now defunct streaming television network Quibi.
Okay, I have to talk about this real quick.
About Quibi?
There was a joke about Quibi in here, and I laughed so hard I stopped the movie because I was like, that's such a deep pull. Why would they talk about that? And this makes so much sense. Because I don't know, did you either one of you guys try Quibi?
Yeah, yeah.
It was a nonsense network. it was based wholly on the idea of should have the option of holding your phone in vertically. Any direction to watch something. So if like you're watching like a Quibi TV show, you could hold it vertically if you want it, or you can do it in landscape.
But why?
Because why not?
But then I'm missing things if I'm holding it vertically.
No, because they film it so that you don't.
Weird.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I remember hearing them like, that's such a random thing to mention. Like, okay, Quibi. I had investments in Quibi. And I'm like, That's a really, like, it actually made me stop and think, like, when Quibi came out, which I don't even remember.
I would say probably around, like, 2016, 17.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't too long ago. It was during the time when, like, you know, people were becoming more and more focused on, like, video content on phones. And it was right before, or actually it was right around the same time that you had TikTok starting, as well as that quiz show.
Oh, yeah. I forgot all about that one.
That quiz one that would come on every day where you had a chance to win.
HQ, right?
HQ. Oh, yeah. Trivia HQ.
Did you ever see the last episode of that?
No. Mm-mm.
Man, was that sad.
Oh, really?
It was so terribly sad because just trying to give out prizes, but like it's all wrapping up and like most of the set's destroyed. And so like they're just like, whatever. It was phenomenal. It's on YouTube.
Wow. That's sad. To the YouTubes after this.
Another quick note about the film. There are multiple mentions of the friends making a podcast. Bowen Yang and Matt Rogers, who play Howie and Luke respectively, are the hosts of the popular podcast Las Culturistas. Joel Kim Booster, who plays Noah, has appeared on the podcast multiple times. So that's a little bit about the film. So just in case you're wondering, this movie was released on Hulu not too long ago. It's a rom-com that, to be quite frank, I wasn't too sure. Okay, let me just put this in in straight terms. I don't like rom-coms.
That the person at the table, that's me.
I just, it's not that they're, well, most of them are just bad movies. They're done bad. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not even about, like, the idea of love and romance and whatever. It's usually cheap rom-com actors who are the same in every other movie, replaying their role, coming on set, with some guy being a jerk, being the absolute polar opposite, some woman being strong but not fully getting it all the way to the 100%. Like, she's riding that, you know, 100 floor stairwell, and she stopped at the 99th floor, like, until, you know, the very end when she gets to the 100th floor, and she's like, oh my god, I couldn't live without him. And he's like, oh my god, she's the best thing in the world. And then they come together after a bunch of antics and whatnot. That's typically the formula for rom-coms. And it's sad because that's about 90-95% of them out there. I say 90-95 because there is a select 5% out of there that I do enjoy. Yeah. I don't talk about it often because it's such a small margin. but like movies that really turn the tables, movies that really give you a unique perspective on not just love, but the idea of relationships and the pursuit therein. It's such a refreshing take on those types of movies, and those are very, very seldom found. The great thing about it is that you found one of my new favorite rom-coms in Palm Springs.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a romantic comedy on top of it being a sci-fi film, and I absolutely love that movie. I cannot stand Andy Samberg as an actor. But after this movie, I'm willing to give him a chance now. It's like, you know, the whole...
Which says a lot.
Which actually says a lot. Because if I'm usually shut down on a character, I'm shut down. Like, Rebel Wilson is dead to me. I don't care how much weight she lost or how proud she is of her sexuality. She's dead to me. You know, for what she did in Bridesmaids, I'm just...
Did she just act in it?
She
wasn't in Bridesmaids.
Yes, she was. She was the sibling to what's his name, Matt.
Oh, Damon. Matt Lucas.
Matt Lucas's character.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
And they're siblings, and she is so awkward.
Well, Matt Lucas is awkward, delightfully awkward.
It's crazy. Oh my god, we got like planes like right above
us. We're doing flybys.
And then Matt Lucas is another one where I almost wrote him off. I literally almost wrote him off until I watched him in Doctor Who. I love him in Doctor Who. I think he's my favorite person in that.
It's his favorite companion so far.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I can understand why. Yeah. He's fantastic.
He is fantastic. So I say all that to say, you kind of couple this with a movie that's about some gay friends who go out and have a, you know, unknowingly one last hurrah week on this island where it's kind of like this straight up party week. Everybody's having fun on Fire Island. They go with their like adoptive mom, Margaret Cho.
Their house mom.
Yeah. And in this movie, you would think that this movie would kind of play at one note. You're like, oh, you know, if you see a bunch of like flamboyancy and whatnot, you're like, oh, okay, it's going to be like that throughout the whole movie. You're thinking you've seen them all in terms of movies that incorporate, you know, the, you know, bisexuality or you know, just homosexuality in general. And I actually, it's going to be hard to say this, but I actually enjoyed the movie.
Yay!
It was interesting. And so before I dive into everything else, because I'm kind of rambling, I want to go ahead and give you guys a couple of spoilers. Number one, or a couple of warnings, we're going to be talking about spoilers. Mm-hmm. So number one. And number two, if you heard the warning at the beginning of the episode, this film is not for everyone. It is a NC-17, or no, it's an unrated.
No, it's R. It's an R rating, but it does have a lot of depictions.
Well, in terms of what it has... We're just saying this is your final and last warning regarding that. This is a conversation that's going to have a lot of really adult-themed conversations. Going to include sex, going to include certain conversational topics and so forth. So for those of you who have young listening ears, or for those of you who are, you know, not really interested in hearing conversations like that, this is your warning. So anyway, back to the... Expectations. So let's talk about expectations, or expectations and experiences. One of the things I really got out of this movie was the fact that it was one of those types of movies that's like a life-changing summer type movie. Kind of like, you know, Stand By Me, kind of like, there's a lot of those, you know, movies that hold like 300 Days of Summer, all those movies.
Sandlot.
They all have that theme of like this one life-changing couple of, you know, moment in the summer that really changes life forever. So I want to know, what is your guys' experience on movies like that? I know we just said a few, but are there any other ones that you guys can think of that, you know, really did, really kind of stand at the forefront of your thoughts?
Independence Day. That movie changed my life as a child for what summer movies could be.
I like that.
Explosions.
No, I can see, I concur and can take this in two ways. First, the best friends, the movie where within the movie it's the summer that changed my life type of Sisterhood of Traveling Pants, Now and Then, My Girl. They did Parent Trap at one point, I think, came out in the summer. But Mulan, I was in that boat with you for like summer movies. Mulan came out in the summer of 98, and I didn't get like Jurassic Park or Independence Day or anything else that was like a big blockbuster movie. But for me, Mulan, I was like, dang, I want to be her. I want to be her. So,
you
yeah.
I want to be the woman who saved China.
I want to be the woman who saved China. China. Yes.
Everyone will know what you have done for me.
Yes. Yeah. You don't meet a girl like that every dynasty. Yeah, that was really inspiring to me. But when we're talking about quintessential summer, the summer that changed my life movies, Sandlot's one of the first ones that comes to mind for me. Mm. I remember watching that consistently. We were a baseball house anyway. So I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then My Girl. Oh, my gosh, My Girl. I got scared of bees and simultaneously not scared of bees. All in one sequence. Eddie.
For me, it's kind of a deep cut in terms of the idea of the formative change from what you were, and then you experience this one free, you know, situational time that just changes your life and you become different on the other end. It's like, you know, that machine that turns you from a child to an adult, you know, in a unique sense of time. And like, obviously, like movies for me are like Stand By Me, mm-hmm. you know, movies with that formative situation where you have boys that experience something so traumatic and just forcing you to grow up that when you come back, nothing's ever the same. Movies like Y Tu Mama También by Alfonso mm-hmm. Cuarón talk about a sexual revelation for young people. This movie is definitely one of those movies that really shows you from a Hispanic side of things, like a Latin side of things, the way the culture cultivates you and creates you, and then how you come to, I mean, and a lot of those people, like, you know, during that time, how you come to recognize like your own, you know, innate sexuality, so to speak. And the, you know, I mean, and then things that we've seen recently, things like In the Heights. In the Heights is one of those summer movies where, you know, the daughter's coming back from school. You know, it's break. You know, it's during the heat of the summer. And in that small span of time, so much changes and everybody is different by the end of the film. And the music is so beautiful in that movie. And it's every part of it not only changes the characters in the movie, but it also changes the people who are watching, the perspective. I cannot think or even start listening to that song, Paciencia y Fe, without getting emotional. Because it's like, that's a powerful song, and that's a time where, as, you know, a young, you know, Latin American like myself who can relate to a lot of that, those types of situations have a really strong sense of groundedness and reality in it within, you know, my family and my upbringing. So every part of that movie really celebrates and helps kind of mourn as well every bump and things like that happens in the movie, and every, you know, victory as well. But yeah, I mean, you're looking at movies that go all the way back. I mean, even during the 90s when I Know What You Did Last Summer. That was actually a summer movie where things change. They end up killing somebody during the course of the summer, and they're completely different. Although it happens at the beginning of the movie, it still changes them because not all of them live at the end of it. But I say all that to say, like, those, when I saw this movie, that, you know, jumping into first impressions, like, when I saw this movie, that's the vibe I got, like the Sandlot vibe. I got the vibe like Y Tu Mama Tambien, like really heavy in that. I got a lot of vibes of like Stand By Me growing, becoming something more than what they came into. I really felt a sense of like some sense of awakening for the characters and an understanding on my end. You know, I'm a straight, you know, Latin male. I don't, you know, I'm not gay. I don't, you know, but I, looking at this story, looking at the things like this, I really felt a sense of like welcoming, you know, to that type of environment, to that type of culture because of this. And I think this movie is going to be one of those movies that's going to be kind of divisive with a lot of folks because not everybody's going to see the grand story and focus on the minute details, kind of like missing the forest for the trees. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely one of those movies that I hope gets talked about, and we'll talk about it more. But what about you, Spencer? First impressions?
First impressions. Like, overall, I loved this movie. I thought it was, like, really well done and well acted. And then there's a little asterisk.
Okay.
I'm going to be vague and just leave it there.
So I spill my guts. You hold back. I got it.
Well, because I'm trying not to like spill into like, you know.
No.
I hear you. The next section.
No. I hear you. What about you, Amy?
I loved this movie. It's not even a closet anything. I love rom-coms. I have a problem. Like hardcore. I will see almost anything and then be like, well, that was a terrible one.
Yeah. Or I like, remember with our Christmas.
Our Christmas. Oh, yes. It was so terrible. It's so brilliant. And then we had the summer flings, which I got to head up, which was so awesome. And the caveat, of course, for Eddie was that it was not solely focused on the relationship. It had to have some broader story around it,
which was very important and really helped like ground everything that we saw, because I believe all the movies that we saw for that month were decent.
Yeah, because Palm Springs was the last one too. Mm-hmm. So
well, I mean, and we also saw things like Roman Holiday and, you know, Amelie. And I love Amelie. I've never considered Amelie like a rom-com. Mm-hmm. I've always considered it just kind of an artistic expression type film, but coming back through it with the lens of like, okay, I'm looking at this now as a rom-com, I could enjoy it. I could see it still.
Yeah, you know? And this hit so many notes for me where I was like, and usually like the opening quote. I'm gonna try not. It's really hard not to jump straight in, right?
See, that's no why kidding. I pulled back so much.
Oh my gosh, I love this, and I'm excited to talk about it. And yes, can we talk about it now, please?
Well, let's go ahead and dive in and talk about what Spencer's been so itching to talk about, and that is the acting in this film. Right out the gate, I have to admit, I haven't seen Margaret Cho on screen in a long while. Margaret Cho is such a like a delight in this movie. She is like everybody's favorite, like desired mom slash aunt slash adopted mom. She's hilarious in this movie, and she's reminiscent of people that I know in my life, and it only makes me all the more like want to celebrate her, how well I can relate her to those people. But she's a highlight in this film. You have the writer that we were talking about, Joel Kim Booster, who plays the main lead, Noah. Mm-hmm. And Noah is best friends with Howie, played by Bowen Yang. Those two, I feel I got the most emotional weight in this film. And I have to say they're pairing together as just best friends and one trying to help another, you know, in his endeavors, and the other one trying to acclimate to just being in this world. The juxtaposition between the two, there, it was great. I would love to see how they would play, like, flip the role, where, you know, Joel Kim Booster is one who's a little bit more reserved, and Bowen Yang is playing someone who's a little bit more outgoing and a little bit more But I want to say, like, my highlight for the film is those two main guys. Like, they were fantastic. Yeah. What about you, Spence?
All right, I want to go back to Joel Kim. Because okay. I only, like, I first became aware of him, like, several years ago, but it was as a comedian, not, like, as an actor. So, like, I wasn't really expecting much from him, but I was actually pleasantly surprised with, like, how well he did in this movie. Another person I want to point out is Conrad Gamora, who plays Will. Yes. My goodness. This man is the biggest stick in the mud I have seen in a movie. And, like, he just sells his character, even though, like, I have problems with his character.
I feel like looking at that guy, it would almost feel like he's like that in real life. Like, he does it so well that I'm like, you have to be probably like the most boring actor in Hollywood. Like, there's no way that this is just, quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes, an act.
Yeah. Like he's where fun goes to die. Like, that's what this man is.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. And then, is there anyone else I really want to talk about? No, there's not. I'll leave everyone else alone. Amy, what about you?
Totally second Conrad Riccamora. He's come from stage for, like, Broadway and off Broadway, so I totally loved his stick in the mud. And when we talk about parallels to what this is adapted from or based on, we can talk about his Mr. Darcy impression, because it was very good. The other person I want to bring up, two of them actually, is Torrin Miller, who played Max, who he was the rather quiet guy in the background. He was larger, and he was the one, whatever he took at the party, where he was just like, I'm gorgeous in the mirrors.
Yeah.
I was like, I love you. Can you come be my friend, please?
He was really good. I really liked his character. He reminds me a lot about another friend of mine who I do YouTube with at times. Mm-hmm. Like, I was watching him, and I'm like, and it's just like, just because they have the same, like, they're very intelligent, and he was such, like, a sweetheart in this movie, and I loved the evolution of the character and how well it's like for him. They know how he is. He's just this person who doesn't do fun. He doesn't do this. Like, that's what they say. And they're like, oh, you know we can't ever make you fun or whatever, whatever. And he takes something.
He says, we can't get you to do drugs. It's no secret. We can't get you to do drugs. And he's like, but maybe
you're not even going to pressure me? And it's like, oh my gosh. And yeah, that scene is just, it's super funny and it's super cute. It's cool.
And then, of course, we can always sing the praises of Margaret Cho. But then really, the next one's up, Charlie. So James Scully. The wide-eyed optimism this man brought was so like, oh, sweetheart, you just are so optimistic. I don't know how we're going to handle this. It was a delight to see, again, with the parallels between Pride and Prejudice, where people were playing off the characters, but fully and 100% themselves, was so refreshing, especially with Matt Rogers, who was Luke, and Tomas Mateos, which was Keegan. They're playing essentially Lydia and Kitty Bennett. Like, they are.
So we'll talk about the relation to.
I need to, because that's where your parallels come in. But basically, they were the two. Like,
we haven't touched the parallels yet.
Oh my gosh. Like, everything.
We haven't gotten there yet.
It's the next section.
There's literally, a reason why we have notes. Like. I feel like we might need to bring in, like, some kind of buzzard or something, a little light when she does this. I feel like there was a lot of great performances in this movie. I do feel like what was his name? The guy who played Cooper, he looked like a waxed up version of Jamie Kennedy.
Yes,
I didn't really.
Yes. Yes.
You thought it too?
Yes.
I'm like, why does he look like Jamie Kennedy, like, had like about $1 million worth of work done with the same dry, no good humor. It would have been the same. He looked a lot like him, and he just rubbed me the wrong way in the movie. I don't know if it was his, other than the character role that he played, like, it didn't seem to stick for me. Like, it was like, oh, he showed up in a scene, he made comments, and then he wandered off. He showed up in a scene, he made comments, and then he wandered off. He went into a scene, pulled somebody into another room, had a scene and then wandered off. There was never any potential for him to be anything more possibly with this script, but I just felt like his delivery, I felt like he was kind of salty for the role that he was given. He's like, well, I'm fine, I'll just do whatever I want, blah blah blah, like, because I didn't really get a lot of life out of that character.
Okay, I want to say that basically, with the exception of Will, everyone else in Charlie's little group, mm-hmm. I feel doesn't fully work. Like,
I feel like they're just stereotypes.
I feel like they're like half-baked ideas.
Yeah.
Like, because like, oh yeah, Cooper, like he's always like saying something, but why? Also, like, Cooper really is friends with Charlie? Like, why and how? They seem like very different people.
Yeah. And I feel like with Cooper's character, what's his name?
Dex.
Well, no, not Dex.
Braden. Braden was so dumb. It was
even
brilliant.
With Reese, like, they just all felt
hyper stereotypical.
Like hyper stereotypical. Like the type of people who are just there to fill a role for the situation needed, mm-hmm. you know. And then even situationally, like, oh, well, you know, Charlie only, you know, Charlie brought Will so that, you know, he and I could hook up and blah blah blah. So because I'm gonna need a starter boyfriend in LA, and I'm like, that's not deep enough for me. Like, that's just bleh. Like, that doesn't mean anything. That's enough. That right there is a trope of a bad rom-com that I was looking at. I'm like, please don't let this movie be hinged upon that. Please don't let this movie be just focused on that as an element for, you know, for Noah and for Will and whatnot and everyone else. Because then at that point in time, there's a slippery slope when it comes to rom-coms. And when it comes to the performance of in the movie, mm-hmm. you're either really great as yourself or you're really great being other people. If you're anywhere in between, the rom-com is going to eat you up. And there are movies where there are people out there like Failure to Launch, I almost forgot the wrong one. The Wedding Planner, horrible movie. Like, the premise is so predictable and how it's going to happen. You're like, why am I even watching this? You know, and unfortunately, it's got like Matthew McConaughey. Matthew McConaughey is a rom-com icon. I try to say that five times fast.
Matthew McConaughey.
Rom-com icon. That's three times.
Sorry, you made me do it because I don't get to talk about this.
But no, but like, so the idea of like those movies that have those formulaic twists and turns and those obvious tropes, and you're like, oh, this person is just the catty person who does this, or this person is the woman or the man who's coming in to try to steal so and so. And it's like when you start delving into those points, it becomes formulaic. And I'm looking at Amy because she's building a claw in her hand. And I'm assuming this is all pertaining to the fact that this is something that's in Pride and Prejudice.
Yes.
So So I feel like, yes, for the sake of the safety of both of us, Spencer,
yes, I'm going to transition closer to me, and he's starting to lean away. Knows things are coming.
So I'm going to transition over to Amy talking about the parallels for this, because if not, I feel like you're very much in danger. Mm. Okay. Right. So Amy, go ahead.
First off, should we establish what you guys know about Pride and Prejudice?
Why don't you just start off and just talk?
Oh, talk. There you go. I talked. So yes, this movie, it has a mess of parallels to Pride and Prejudice. Basically, the entire concept right from the jump kind of follows the storyline of the actual books, considering also Noah starts the entire thing by quoting the very first line in Pride and Prejudice at the very beginning of the movie, which is great. So the people that you hate literally are playing characters that you are supposed to hate. Cooper is playing, is supposed to be, hysterically enough, a parallel of Catherine Bingley, who Charlie is Mr. Bingley. And they are supposed to be hooking up with Will. Like, she's basically like, oh yeah, it's my brother's best friend and we're going to be together forever. So I loved, hated it so, so hard, so hard. I was like, oh, all the tropes.
I have a quick question. Yes. Like, in the book, does that friend group, or like however like they're connecting characters into the book, do they make more sense there?
It does, because it's a Regency period. Mm-hmm. So what you're dealing with is Mr. Darcy, Will, Mr. Bingley, Charlie. are part of the higher echelons of society, and they have friend groups where basically it's like, oh, you know, you're really awesome. You should marry my sister, or you should hook up with my sister. Marry my sister. You never hook up. And so Cooper is filling the space of Catherine Bingley, who was Charlie's sister, Mr. Bingley's sister in the book. And it makes sense because it's like keeping it all in that circle, which is super creepy and weird, but it's how they used to do it. Brayden, I don't know who the hell Brayden was, but except for just like a laughing point at every turn. But yeah, so the concept for like the higher society and lower society, which they've established on Fire Island, and Noah brings up where they live with house mom Erin, is, and she's playing a Mrs. Bennett, but a totally more kosher, cooler Mrs. Bennett, because in the books, Mrs. Bennett is nuts. Like, she's like, I got to get my babies married off as quick as possible. And in this one, they're like, oh, these are my babies. We got to take care of them. Just go have a good time. It's going to be great. And yeah, it's the higher and lower in society, as well as trying to balance that everybody within Noah's friend group plays a particular role to a character in the story. So everybody has, except, so Noah is supposed to be Elizabeth Bennett. And then Howie is supposed to be, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on her name. Jane Bennett, who is like,
I mean, this is all you here.
This is
all me. You know, you've literally been jumping in that seat waiting to get to this point, and you literally are falling short because you can't remember names.
Jane Bennett, who is in the books like the beautiful one, the one that everybody adores, like the quintessential great person. So I was like, okay, Howie's filling all of those bubbles. And then you get to Max, who is Mary, who's like the quiet, studious one that nobody ever talks to. And then you have Luke, who is supposed to be Lydia, who ends up in the book running off with a sketchy person.
Ah.
And Keegan, who is playing Kitty, who is the littlest sister, who basically Luke and Keegan's relationship is exactly like Lydia and Kitty's. Like, they're constantly all over, like on top of one another, and like, oh, I love you, I hate you. Oh, you're like the biggest flirts, cheerleaders, embarrassments, the whole thing. And that first night when they get invited over to the party where they kind of just mess everything up is a great parallel to the first time that the Bennets have that happen too. So either way, long story short, so much Pride and Prejudice. I have a problem.
So, yes. So in terms of how this movie moves about, does the film hit all the major beats for the book?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So why don't you explain that, since we did say we were going to talk about spoilers. So okay. What are some of the main, not all of them, I'm looking at you like not all of them, but what are some of the major beats that this film parallels closely to the book?
So the first one is the overhearing, Noah overhearing Will and Charlie talking about them like behind the screen. It parallels in the books where something similar is happening, where Mr. Bingley, Charlie, says, you know, oh, they're really great and I really like, and he's referring to Jane, but in this one it's referring to Howie. And Will says, oh, it's something about him being, he can't be that annoying and being that cute simultaneously, which is paralleling Elizabeth finding, hearing Mr. Darcy talk about that. And then when Noah pops out and gets super quippy all of a sudden and takes Will by surprise, that is paralleled in the books. Another one, which I love to bring up consistently, is the running in the rain sequence where they're running across the island and it's raining and Will's chasing after Noah. And they have kind of that, like, that moment where he's like, no, I can't have you. And I was like, yes, you're in the books, you're in the movies, everybody's experiencing this right now. The Dex running off with Luke, spoiler, parallels Lydia and another character who was actually against Mr. Darcy in the books. They run off, they get freaky deaky in the books and in the movie, and bad things happen. The twist on this was, the outcome for this was actually more refreshing and more up to date than what happens in the book, because nobody got forcibly married off. So I can cool with that.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yes. And then the ending, hilariously enough, actually did kind of parallel the books, except they weren't, if you watch the Keira Knightley Pride and Prejudice, they do end up sitting down watching the sunset and everybody's together. So yeah, a lot of the major points in this film really do hit consistently with this with the book and the movie. So yes. And I left a whole bunch out, but yes.
Okay. Okay. So in terms of, so let me ask you, Spencer, since you and I are the ones who aren't nerds. No.
You and I are the ones. Is punched. I'm good.
Yeah, it is. You and I haven't read these books. We're not familiar with the stories, but knowing all this, knowing what you just heard, is that enough to make you semi-interested in reading the book?
Oh, no. Okay. It's a just period piece.
Would like, you want to watch the movie?
That's all you, boo. That's not. I'm not even going to say a word.
You can always say no. I'm not going to be offended. Yeah. I'll take an uncertain.
Here's the thing for me. I can't do period pieces like that that are consistently just a lot of talk. Like if you're doing like movies or stories that have to do with maybe action or like medieval times or, you know.
Well, there's Pride and Prejudice and Zombies if you're feeling froggy.
Yeah, no. I don't know. Just a lot of those types of movies, like those Jane Austen type stories, they just, I don't know. They just don't do it for me. I don't know.
They do it for me.
in terms of the film, was there any issues you had pertaining to the movie? Hmm. Not everybody talk at once.
No.
I think for me, the only issue that I would have is is the limiting the accessibility of this movie to a wider audience, in including like such like certain really graphic sex scenes. Like I think a little bit more implied would have helped grease, no pun intended, the movie into a position where offering it to a younger audience who may be, you know, maybe questioning their own sexuality or may even be, you know, interested or may already even be gay or bi or, you know, however they define their sexuality and are looking for something fun to watch that really celebrates, you know, the great things about this month. I think that was one of the things that I felt really did kind of pull me out of certain scenes. There was one that was kind of funny, but at the same time, if you removed it, would it still be the same movie? I think that's the biggest question when it comes to any particular scene. Like, if I removed X scene and Y scene and Z scene from a film, would that still make the film as good as it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm just, like, for me here, I'm just a stickler for, like, making movies as accessible to any and all audiences. And I really enjoyed this movie, but those moments kind of pulled me out. And that's in any type of film. Like if you have a film that just all of a sudden drops into two, you know, a guy and a girl or two guys or two girls or whatever, it derails kind of the flow, in my opinion, of the flow of some of the movies that are out there. And some of them, they do it tastefully. Some of them, they do it just kind of abruptly. And I think this was one of those ones that was more for like, not shock value, but for like showing the level of intensity and chaos that's going on in the scene and then having it needed to be mirrored sexually. I don't know. What do you think, Spence? Honestly.
I think that this might have been a calculated thing by Hulu, because if you look at it from what Hulu does, they do have something that's more for a younger audience, and they probably don't have as much for an older gay audience. And so I think that's what is happening here, is they wanted to target something just like specifically for older people, because they have like, I think they just finished up Love, Victor, that's been going on for like the last couple of years, and that has a TV-14 rating on it. So I'm thinking like they're like, okay, you hit the low end and you hit the high end.
That could also, I mean, here's the honest truth too as well, that could also be like my limited amount of like Hulu viewing in terms of their level of what they put out. I mean,
to be fair, Hulu was not good for a while.
There you go. But what are your thoughts in terms of like that thought, like pertaining to the amount of gratuitous sex that was in it? I mean, because it's not a lot. It isn't.
It's not a lot.
But in those scenes.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, when some of those scenes happened, I was like, oh man. But then like on. On the flip side, I can't think of another movie kind of like this.
True.
And so I'm thinking, you know, bring like balance.
Yeah.
Like, sure, why not have it? But like, for me, like, you know, I'm fine without seeing everyone do drugs. And like, true. Like, oh, we found some drugs on the floor. Let's do some. I was like, No. Like
the Margaret Cho and Spencer came out.
Yeah, because I would have been like, oh, they are lucky I was not in this movie. I would have been slapping some hands away from stuff. Like, you think you can just eat stuff off the floor? I don't care about the 5-second rule.
Here, I picked this gum up from under the table. Eat that instead. Yeah, I for me, you're right. I think one of the biggest things for me in terms of Hulu, because thankfully, due to like Palm Springs and a lot of the other really great movies that actually are coming out of like Sundance and coming out of like South by Southwest and coming out of like all these great film festivals that are finding homes on this particular platform, because it seems like every time a film festival comes out, yeah, Amazon gets a couple and they're like the high, you know, high profile ones. You know, Netflix gets maybe one or two. Paramount Plus can get maybe one. I think that,
what on earth has Paramount Plus?
I think they're getting that one with the robot, Ben and Charlie or something.
Oh, they're getting, oh yeah,
Brian and Charlie.
Yeah. Brian and Charlie. Yeah. I think they're getting that one.
I think that, yeah.
I don't have to. I've been seeing. Did you watch Brian and Charlie?
I've been seeing it all over like TikTok. It keeps popping up. So, I'm hip. but the good chunk of the ones that, you know, you're like, that one looked good, but this one also looked good too. Like, they have all those ones, like a good chunk of those there. And they keep putting out really great documentaries. They keep putting out really great, you know, independent films. And I'm like, okay, all right. But I don't think I have a full grasp of like the scale of like what level of, you know, intensity unique to their demo that they put out. So that could be part of it. Who knows? Good. I mean, I was just talking about the other day about that that movie, early 90s movie with Andy Garcia, Internal Affair, which is literally about Richard Gere having sex with every single wife of the police force. And Andy Garcia is brought in as Internal Affairs to investigate a situation where a suspect was killed, but didn't really have a murder weapon on him, and they found a knife on him, but it looked like it was planted, which it was planted by Richard Gere. So in between all the sex that Richard Gere is having, he's also planting.
What?
He's murdering and planting.
He's
weapons.
Essentially a crooked cop. It was an interesting movie, and it's 90s like sex scenes, so they're like just literally throwing each other all over the place and you barely see anything. I feel like this one was just, you can see it clearly, and I think that was the part that kind of just, I was focused on the story, like, mm-hmm. to be completely frank.
Yeah, if you're focused on the story, that's going to be really jarring.
Yeah. Like, even when they show, like, the semi-sex scene between Noah and Dex.
The one in the back room.
Yeah, the one in the back room.
They call it the dark room.
Like, before it even transitions into anything else, it's like, it's still kind of tastefully done. You're not seeing anything, but you know what's happening. And everyone else is like, you know, doing every single page from the Kama Sutra, you know, and just, and it's like, hey, you know, to each his own. But yeah, it was interesting in terms of the flow of the film. What about you, Amy?
So of the sex scenes, there's that one. There's the spoiler, the video from Dex and Luke. But also when he goes to find Howie at the party and he can't find him and he walks into the room and he calls his name. That one, if you're following the story, it is fairly graphic. There is not sex in Pride and Prejudice, like, except for one point, which is literally which parallels Luke and Dex. So initially I was like, oh, that's very abrupt. Okay. And they tried to play it off really humorously, especially the first time it happens. The second time, again, it was more tastefully done, which was the dark room. And then with the videos weren't hyper graphic, but you could tell what was going on.
Yeah.
And I actually agree with Spencer that this is probably aimed at a more adult group.
Yeah.
Because this community has never had the opportunity to be an adaptation of a great piece, a great literary classic. Yeah. And I've seen literally every version of Pride and Prejudice, including the Bollywood one, that I could get my hands on. This is, as much as sexuality and sex is a part of this community, I feel this was them kind of not only acknowledging it, but saying, like, this week it's about getting your freak on. Well, and we're going to do it.
And I think one of the things that we haven't mentioned fully with this particular film is that the focal point of the movie, the focus for Noah and Howie, is Noah is... So Howie works as a graphic designer for a startup in San Francisco. So he's kind of meek. He's kind of shy. Plays this particular type of character.
He's adorable.
And Noah is trying to get him, laid, essentially. That's his whole goal for the entire week that they're there. And Noah is in this mindset that he's not even going to look at another guy until Howie has been, has done the deed. So it is definitely a part of the focal point of the film. Like, it is a plot that runs through it, So I don't know. Maybe it's just something that I need to dive more into Hulu to kind of see how well it's aimed at. Because honestly, I go to Hulu, I look at documentaries, which are usually kind of crazy in themselves. And then I'm watching, Futurama, or King of the Hill.
I can't really speak specifically to Love, Victor because I've never seen it, but I have seen the movie it came from, Love, Simon.
And oh yeah.
Let me tell you something. That movie is so like it's a declawed cat. It is the most tame movie I've ever seen.
Love, Simon.
Yeah, because like that kid barely has a problem in that movie.
Like, all he right. has no trouble. Yeah, there's like, nothing going on with this man.
It's barely like, oh, like his problem's like, I'm gay, meh. And like, I'm like, that's, you're doing fine. Like, whatever, kid. But like, yeah, compared to this movie, like, this movie is not that tame. And I feel like, you know, with like them just meeting different scales, assuming the TV show is like that movie, like, it kind of makes sense why, they're so far apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was trying to figure out because you struck a chord with me when the entire goal for knowing this is get Howie laid, then I get laid. And I was trying to figure out what other movies that premise is highly present in. And part of it, I remember... There's a subsection of Love Actually, which you'll never see, where one of the guys, his entire thing is to go to the U.S. because the girls in the U.S. are easier. He's got an accent and he'll get laid. And I remember that. And then I'm like, there has to be other movies where this is like the heteronormalcy of tonight. Oh, the other one I thought of was Seth Green in Can't Hardly Wait, where his entire goal at the end of... Mm-hmm. I don't know if...
Yeah.
Have you seen...
He's had one. It's very long time ago.
Okay. Quick concept of Can't Hardly Wait. It's the end of the school year. It's a party, and we're following everybody's kind of like what they want to do for their last day in high school, and it's a big party. And Seth Green's character is like the weirdo, horny nerd, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna get laid at this party," and he gets locked in a bathroom with another girl. I remember those tropes, and I was like, "Is there another one that I was missing?" Because that. Like driving force, this isn't until we get probably like halfway through Noah's arc. We don't understand. Like all it seems like
Noah's arc.
Yeah, Noah's arc.
You said a couple of things that made me laugh. Thanks over there, Mister. But in that arc, we don't come to a point. Well, until the middle of the movie or until the middle of that arc, we don't notice that Noah's goal for Howie is to actually see Howie happy, laid and happy. Because Noah is actively changing and growing through the arc to see that it's not just, hey, Noah doesn't just want to get laid. If Noah just wanted to get laid, Noah would do whatever. If Howie wanted to get laid, Howie would do whatever. But Noah is striving to make sure that Howie is happy as well as fulfilled. And so it's like, I'm trying to like place movies, I don't know if I want to call it heteronormalcy movies from the 90s and the 2000s where they're like, I'm horny. I want to get laid. That's the driving force of this movie. And they end up like that. I don't know.
No, I feel like there's a long evolution of movies where the trope has evolved in major motion pictures. Back on the indie circuit, back in the more, you know, obscure, I mean, sex is just, I mean, for God's sakes, we talked about like Ralph Bashke and, you know, a lot of his works, in the element of, you know, innocent mediums being used to, you know, translate, you know, sex and capitalism and things like that. But I think the trope has evolved over the course of time for major motion pictures to go from like getting your friend to get the girl, to kiss the girl, to be with the girl, to, you know, eventually get to first base with the girl. Like there's this evolution of film during the 70s and 80s where a lot of, and even in like the Rat Pack or the Brat Pack, sorry, in John Hughes movies, those ones were really pushing like the whole idea of like in the end, you know, he wants her or she wants him. And there's always like a wingman element, things like that. So I feel like that has always been the pursuit, but I think that the lack of interest in the more innocent form of it has caused it to evolve to the point to where, I mean, the idea is not foreign to movies. For someone to say, hey, I'm going to help my friend get laid, or I'm going to help my friend get lucky tonight, or this weekend, it's all about getting you, blah, blah, blah. Like we've seen it before in a lot of films, you know. But I think the element of this one, I think it's unique because of the fact that it's supposed to parallel a classic novel. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think the portrayal of Howie in this movie makes it a little bit interesting as well, because you can tell at a certain point it almost feels like he's not interested in having sex, he's interested in making a connection. So you did touch on something, you mentioned something earlier that I felt like might be a little triggering for folks who haven't or who are unaware, like the whole story element with Dex and Luke. Because that is something that happens quite often in the real world, and unfortunately the story element or like the plot or the scene itself plays for comedic gags, but there's a very real sense of seriousness to it as well. I appreciate how well it was handled in the movie, but it's still a triggering thing for folks. Like if I was certain that every single person who was going to see it didn't have some sense of trauma in their past, you know, I would be fine with it. But it's the 1%, you know, as long as there's always an element, there's always something to be mindful of, no matter what. I mean, you do that with horror all the time. You do that with certain, you know, mainstream movies. You do it with, you know, the dialogue of certain, you know, white characters or you know, black characters. Like there are things that you have to be mindful of to keep from triggering individuals. And this is one of those moments where I feel like it just to be mindful, like it was done well. But yeah, it was a little difficult for me to see it. I got the point of it and I got the gist, but to know that I know people who have gone through something like that, especially, I mean, I don't know a lot of gay, you know, guys who have gone through it, but I know a lot of women who have gone through it. And I know it's one of those elements where it's almost come off as like, it happened or like whatever, because there is no consideration that'll actually get taken seriously, you know, because of how frequent it does. And that's the other thing. I don't know how frequent that kind of thing happens in that community, you know, which seeing it happen and seeing kind of how it played out was a little interesting, but not everybody's that lucky. You know, not everybody has someone who's nearby who is a actual lawyer to give, you know, lawyer ease to the situation.
Yeah. In relation to this, which is, it's revenge porn that's been put out of Luke and Dex by Dex to gain clout or whatever. In Pride and Prejudice, the concept is that Lydia, who is one of the younger Bennett sisters, is taken off by he's like Captain Wickham. Basically, they run off. They sleep together. They are found by Mr. Darcy as well as her uncle. And then Mr. Darcy funds their wedding to make Lydia a proper wife. Because at that time, any type of intercourse outside of marriage was seen as like you were a blight, to shame upon your family. With this, we see Dex, like, Will tries to let everybody know, hey, do not trust Dex. He's bad. He's hurt other people. And it's really, it's downplayed until it finally happens to Luke and the entire house freaks out. And not like, oh my God, freaks out. It's like Noah's I'm going to kill him is probably the best thing that they could have ever done. And then teaming up and having Will come alongside Noah and get that resolution as quickly as they did, which was surprising. And it's not always that easy for people who are dealing with anything like this. But the resolution was very quick, much like in the books. There was a resolution, and it did come at the assistance of Will, a.k.a. Mr. Darcy. So,
wrapping this whole thing up, I did have a question for the table. And don't look at the notes because I didn't put it in there.
I don't have my notes if nobody has been able to tell.
Movies, like movies that take a variation of classic literature are becoming more and more popular. We actually have a film coming out on Netflix called Persuasion, I believe. Which stars Alicia Vikander.
But no, that's not also Vikander. Based on the original book.
That's what I'm saying. There's movies that are coming out that are based on these classic novels. Now, in this format, is there a LGBTQ version of a book that you would like to see, whether or not it is classic literature or modern literature, a variation of it? And what is that movie? Like, I'm going to be straight up. I would love to see an LGBTQ variation of The Wizard of Oz. I feel like
that would be so much fun.
That would be so cool and so crazy and so much fun. I feel like
so brilliant.
Like, whoever plays Dorothy is gonna look fabulous. It won't be like ruby slippers. It'll be like a ruby jumpsuit. Like, I feel like there's gonna be so much in there that'll be eye appealing, and the story will be unique. But yeah, I would love. I would actually, even now that I'm calling it out right now, I would love to see Torian Miller play the Cowardly Lion. Like, I just feel like he would play good.
Oh, he was so delightful. Yeah, I loved seeing Pride and this adaptation of Pride and Prejudice. It fit the time, it fit everything. My first thing, hysterically enough, I almost thought of Beauty and the Beast. Like, there's been so many variations of that, teen variations, like different. We've got the French, we've got Disney. You can go on forever, but the story in and of itself is very timeless. And I would love to see how that played out. When you started talking about a ruby jumpsuit for The Wizard of Oz, my brain went to kinky boots, because there are very, very beautiful bright red thigh-high boots in that. And I was like, those would be some really good shoes for Dorothy. But yeah, I'd like to see Beauty and the Beast. It's timeless. And I don't think the LGBTQ, it's plus now at this point. But the community has had that opportunity to take a very, very classic story and use it as they would like to see fit, or interpret it as they would like to see fit. I think that'd be fun.
There you go. What about you, Spencer? Any thoughts?
Did I take yours? I'm sorry if I did.
No, I was trying to make sure that this doesn't exist, because I think it doesn't.
There you go.
It doesn't. Cinderella.
Yes. That would be an interesting one.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I am intrigued.
I mean, we already have a sense of it with the newer Cinderella with Billy Porter as.
But like, I'm just saying that, but Full Throttle.
There you go. I could see that. I think the slight issue. Is that there are so many variations of that story element in different formats. Like, we have that sneakers one where there's a young boy who plays the Cinderella type.
True. That's on Disney Plus.
And that's on Disney Plus. I don't know. Like, I would like to see it, like, full-blown done properly. So, here's to hoping, right?
Yeah, because, like, I feel like if you do, like, a slight mashup of the new one and then also, like, incorporate some stuff from, like, Brandy's version.
Yeah, I was going to say, have Billy Porter come out and sing Impossible.
Yeah. I'd be down for that. I love that song.
Oh, my gosh. It's such a good... And I would love Bernadette to come back as the stepmother. Yes. So good. Yeah, more Billy Porter, please.
So, wrapping this whole thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table. Let's talk about whether the film passes or fails and how many monocles... I want to start with Amy.
Of course, this movie passes for me. I love rom-coms. I don't care. Love is love. And this is such a fun romp, a great adaptation of Pride and Prejudice.
You say a fun romp?
Yes.
Doesn't that mean like when you have a fun roll in the hay? Is that what you're trying to say?
It can also be a jaunt. Okay. Okay. It could be a roll. It can However be a roll you roll, hay.
That's all hey. You.
but I really loved this. The arcs were wonderfully done. The characters are well thought out. There is such a great celebration of not only the community, but the spirit of storytelling and of people as a whole. So this is, I think, the first one that I'm giving a 5 out of 5 because I'm going to rewatch it.
Spencer. There you go.
Yeah, this movie passes for me. Huge soccer. like, this movie was really well done. Even, like, the really annoying characters are, like...
For Hulu. That's what I'm...
Yeah, I feel like Hulu's in, like, a new era where, like, because something came out on Hulu, it is not automatically garbage.
Yes, 100%, yeah.
So, congratulations to Hulu. We finally noticed... That not all your movies are stupid.
Yeah.
And this is one of them that is not. It's definitely worth a watch. Just be ready for lots of stuff flying around. This is going to get a 4.5 out of 5 for me.
Nice.
A 4.5 out of 5. There
it's
you go.
It's fun.
It is fun.
I like it. In regards to my thoughts, I definitely pass this movie. This movie obviously takes its big plot moments based on already a tried and true classic novel, and it gives it a fresh new look, a fresh new coat of paint. I absolutely love the dynamic of this movie. I love, and I was telling somebody about this today, I love the purity of how much this movie pursues love. I think it's such a unique way in movies that we haven't seen yet, and I feel like we need more of this type of film in society to help people see all sides and understand everybody deserves love in all ways. The movie was great. The dialogue was great. I absolutely loved all the big scenes. In terms of monocles, I'm going to give this movie a 4.5 as well out of 5. There were certain small things that just, like, Jamie Kennedy was not fun for me. and Will, for the good first half of the movie, seemed like the most, like,
wooden
person that I just would not want to spend time in a room with. So, but I do give it a 4.5. It's definitely worth a watch if you are an adult and if you're somebody who is wanting to see a movie that really just highlights and celebrates all the great aspects of the LGBTQ plus community and everything that they do and just love, just find something that just exudes love. This is a movie for you. So, but that about wraps up another awesome review from the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. We got over 300 episodes, allegedly, on obviously now rom-com movies and action and I almost said romance. Oh, my God. Anime.
I will put that list together.
check us out. If you're looking for it, we got it over at filmlosophers.com. You can also find us on all the streaming platforms for podcasts, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, or TuneIn. You can tune into each and every one of those places. Check us out. Subscribe to our podcast. Give us a listen. If you like what you're listening to, give us a 5-star review. I think we've earned it. Also, you can check us out on all the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. As I stated, we have a huge giveaway that's going to be starting in July. We are going to be giving away something very unique, something really cool. And I need you to pay attention and listen in the next episode, because that first episode in July, we're going to be talking about it and you will want to hear how you can win. So details will be coming soon. You can check out the web, the socials as soon as we put it up on July 1st. We'll talk about it then. But yeah, This was a great movie, and I really do hope, for somebody like me who does not like rom-coms, I really do hope for all those cynics out there, and even for all those people who are a little biased or even just ignorant, I would hope and pray that you would get an opportunity to see a movie that truly just highlights what love really means. And it's not about who loves who or how they love or whatever. It's about just the purity of what love is. So I hope you guys check that out. And so, yeah. But from all of us here at the Filmlosspers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
Class dismissed.
Happy Pride.